today's episode, overreacting to, with Kansas, with Oklahoma, with Oregon, with Georgia. Conference races heating up. We got it all. We'll try to say something nice even.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
A lot of fans think they're part of the staff, right? A lot of fans think they could help the ball club. Now you can, not just with your NIL donation.
Russ Dellinger.
It's like a train, man. Like, you could see Oregon mowing down, you know, winning the rest of the way, getting the Pac-12 title game, avenging the loss to Washington there, and then maybe squeezing into the CFP.
And SI's Pat Forte.
For a kicker, he had a little wiggle. He had some speed. Got 9 yards. What, one lifetime carry, 9 yards. Not bad, right? Except for the fact that he should never have had the ball in the worst call of the season, even worse than anything Dan Lanning has done.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we need to pour one out to a goalpost that wound up at Potter Lake in Lawrence, Kansas. The Kansas Jayhawks, with the shocker of the season so far, or one of them, take down number 6 Oklahoma, 38-33. First home victory over a top 10 opponent for the Jayhawks since 1984. Those goalposts might not have been threatened. This is the Reagan administration. Were they the same goalposts, you think?
I'm going to go with no. Because Kansas, and probably I'm going to bet in like 2007 when they were actually good, that they might have taken them down then for somebody.
Yeah, that's the last time they had back to back, I think, bowl trips, because they went, you know, they with their win yesterday, they got to bowl eligibility. This is just a shocking stat. This is only the second time in the history of Kansas football that they're going to go to bowls in consecutive years. Only other time was that 07-08. Just incredible what Lance Leipold has done there.
Before he arrived, they went 11 years without more than 3 wins. And I had a running gag that they didn't actually have a stadium. There's no proof that there was a stadium there.
They're about to spend $300 million, I think, renovating it.
Yeah, they just played at Lawrence High School.
Played in the windblown prairie there, yeah. No stands, yeah.
Yeah, stadium needs help. They need some fans. They need all that. But amazing game. Oklahoma now, you know, look, they beat Texas. They had their sleepwalk against UCF, but then they couldn't get it going on this. Let's start talking a little Kansas and OU. I don't know. Either way, OU or Kansas, Jason Bean, the redshirt senior, 60-year guy, been there for a few years at North Texas before, didn't leave when he lost his job, gets the job back, huge win, made enough plays. Kansas ran the ball, and this is the concern for Oklahoma. 5.5 yards a carry, no sacks, 25 first downs. Like, they were just consistently able to move the ball on OU. I watched a bunch of the game, and that does not bode well for Oklahoma and the whole Big 12. I don't know. What thoughts on the game? Let's just go with that, and then we'll get to more of the other stuff. Ross, did you see it? Did you watch it?
I got to watch a good bit of it. Yes, it was like every time you thought, I mean, Oklahoma, it was just back and forth, right? Like late in the game, and you know, the old kind of Kansas, you still think of Kansas as still the old Kansas, and so every time that they would take the lead or something, and Oklahoma would just come right back down the field, you know, and retake the lead. And you thought, okay, this is it. You know, they're not going to match them. And then they do, and they find a way to get it done. They had the long touchdown pass kind of late in the game there. And Bean has been, it's been pretty good, man. I mean, he didn't have the best numbers yesterday. He threw a couple of interceptions. But like when it counts, like late in the game, they make plays, and Devin Neal, our running back, has been just tearing it up. You know, it and also the Big 12 is just insane, right? I mean, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams are tied at the top at 4-1, and then another two teams are at 3-2, and those teams are Kansas and West Virginia, tied for second place in the Big 12. The Big 12 is so fun. We've talked about it on the show before, like, and especially the future Big 12 is just going to be just as fun with even more parity. It's like a mini NFL every weekend, because you really don't know. I mean, anybody can beat anybody in that league. The parity is incredible. I mean, USF or UCF is 0-5 in the league, but they've almost beaten like three times. They almost beat Oklahoma. You know, I mean, it's a fun league.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and this is again the continuation of what it's been the last few years. And the stretch run here through November is going to be bonkers, including the last Bedlam game ever, theoretically, next week in Stillwater. That scene's going to be woo. I don't want to be Oklahoma walking into that one. But as far as this game, Oklahoma was propped up throughout its early season. First of all, they played a really weak schedule to begin with. But overall, they were plus 11 turnover margin through their first five games. Since then, they're minus one. And they were lucky to beat UCF, and then they couldn't beat Kansas. And if you're one of those teams that's surviving on turnover margin, that isn't necessarily an indication that it's going to last forever. Sooner or later, those things tend to even out. And if you're not a great team, that can get you. Their last four games, they've given up 5.5, 6.8, 5.6, and 6.1 yards per play. So the defense has definitely regressed as they've played better offenses. And, yeah, with the schedule ahead in that league, there are no guarantees. Oklahoma State's red hot. They've got a West Virginia team that's better than advertised. Then they closed BYU, TCU. So I think Oklahoma, there were definitely some warning signs last week, and those were reinforced this week. And good for Kansas, though. I mean, this is unbelievable. I know, like, Michigan State fans are clamoring for Mike Elko. What about Lance Leipold? I mean, that guy, to do this, what he's done at Kansas, that is a sign of great coaching, and to do it quickly and to do it in a good league. I mean, that's fantastic work.
Yeah, well, they're clamoring for Urban. They're going Urban first. They want Urban.
Okay. We'll good see. Lord.
Okay.
Everybody wants Urban.
You got a dream. I hope he comes back. I want him back. College great football theater is a lot more fun with Urban Meyer. I'm good with him in East Lansing. I believe enough of the reports that they're trying. I didn't believe the report that Urban Meyer was in East Lansing. Like, why would Urban go to East Lansing?
Yeah,
no, you been go there to before.
You go to the King.
It's beautiful in October there, huh? The leaves are changing. Why would you not go?
This ain't Zip Recruiter, buddy. You go to him. if you're counting on him to come in for the visit, you ain't getting him. That ain't how Urban rolls. You go find him. But they're trying. But yes, Lance Leipold. I mean, he's won. I mean, he won what? How many Division III titles? Six.
His record was just preposterous.
Right? Yeah, six Division I, Division III titles at Wisconsin-Whitewater. Then he goes to Buffalo and gets them going. I mean, they had a 10-win season. They were like 6-1 during the COVID year. Like, they got really good in the MAC. And now, look, 6-7 last year was a miracle. He took that job over too late, like in 2021, because they fired Les Miles late. Because it was the scandal. I can't even remember which scandal it was, but I think it wasn't a good one. Yeah. It wasn't pretty.
It was sexual harassment type situation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then he's kind of only had two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you can't even install what you want to do until fall camp and you don't have that, incredible job. Kansas fans don't want to hear that on their thing. But the Big 12 race, you know, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, no, I was going to get to like a couple things there, but the Big 12 race, how about the new teams in the Big 12 that came up from the American and then BYU Independent? Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston are a combined 1-14 in the Big 12 this year. BYU is a little bit of the outlier. They're 2-3. I mean, they have two wins. BYU does more than the other three combined. But rough sledding for the new guys. Lance, I was on the phone with somebody yesterday about Lance and what lies ahead for him as far as the coaching carousel and the cycle here coming up. you know, Kansas was kind of locked in a, they signed him to an extension, you know, last year and after last year's season. And, but they were like, it was all November, I think, was seesawing back and forth of efforts to keep him, as I think a lot of schools were kind of knocking on the door, so to speak. But in the conversation I had yesterday, you know, Lance is in Willie Fritz are two coaches that have taken over programs that when they took them over, Willie, of course, at Tulane, you know, they were not having success and hadn't had success for the previous decade or more. And they're both around in the same age. Lance is 59, Willie's 63. And they both were, you know, at the lower levels, right? Lance was at the Division III level. Willie was at, for a while, I think he was at Central Missouri, and then was at FCS school like Sam Houston State and then Georgia Southern. Won everywhere, you know, they're very similar. And I think with the jobs coming open maybe and open right now, you got to think one of those guys, if not both of them, will be prospects elsewhere. I think age is hurting them, but they're very similar to me in their back in, I mean, you know, Tulane is 7-1 right now after winning the Cotton Bowl and in the conference championship last year and all that. It's just interesting about those two guys. Keep an eye on coming coaching carousel. See if anybody would take a chance on, you know, a little up-aged coach.
I mean, to me, you're trying to hire a coach that can for 5 years, you know.
Yeah.
Ideally, you get a guy for 20 years, but those are so rare.
Yeah.
Like just
increasingly rare. If I had an opening, Lance Leipold is absolutely on the short list, no matter where I am.
Absolutely. And it's just when you've coached those other levels, you don't get to just load up. You have to coach whatever you have.
Right.
Like some years you got a running back and some years you got a quarterback and some years you got a defense, you know, and it's not just, oh, well, I was a coordinator somewhere and we just kept landing five-star wide receivers because that's the program that we're in, or five-star quarterbacks because that's the, you know, you got to learn how to win games. And that's generally what he's done.
He was 109-6 at Wisconsin Whitewater.
I mean,
ridiculous.
You know, it's incredible recruiting machine they've got there. Yeah, Whitewater.
Yeah, the waterfall there, the miniature golf course.
It's kind of nice. It is
the
nice.
Slide the barbershop.
Yeah. Speaking of this Big 12, though, okay, so Texas wins. Malik Murphy was good enough, but he might not need to be better because next week. So we kind of looked at it after Red River. Texas, OU, they roll, rematch, Big 12 championship game down in Arlington. Not so fast. Texas has to go to play. Kansas State comes to Austin. Kansas State is rolling now. Kansas State looks like what I predicted them to make the playoff. This is starting to look like that. 41-3 over TCU. Nice week. Let's follow Houston. It up. No, that was TCU. Mm-hmm. They follow it up with 41 zip.
Same. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how good they are. Two in a row. Yeah, it's TCU and Houston, but not easy to beat a team that big. Meanwhile, Pat mentioned, OU has to go to Bedlam, and Oklahoma State is looking very good. And then they're still they're all, everyone here is 4-1, and Iowa State is off the mat. Remember the hot seat when they lost to Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
Campbell was ready to fight some guy in the stand in the crowd who was yelling. He's in the hot seat. In the hot seat anymore. The water drinkers, the Bush Light, the men of the Bush Light, the lake partiers. They're partying on the lake even though it's getting cold.
They don't need it to be warm up there.
No. Fine. They'll get those ice huts out there soon enough. They're 4-1, but next week, the entire Big 12 could flip on a dime, depending what Kansas State and Oklahoma State can do to Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah, that I did something last week in the Dash on teams that were having October revivals, and I had Oklahoma State and Iowa State in there, but I could have put Kansas State in there as well. I mean, like the entire Big 12 has just kind of shifted from September to October here, and we'll see where then next. Where is it going in November? It's going to be fascinating theater.
Georgia They wailed on Florida at the cocktail party. Carson Beck, 315 yards, two touchdowns, couple explosive 50-yard-plus passes. Running game was really sound. They just pushed Florida around, 486 total yards. No Brock Bowers, no problem. They play like this, the title's still running through the dogs. I don't really care what Ohio State, Michigan, and everyone else is doing. They have to be considered still the favorite. They have gotten, yes, they, you know, they weren't always impressive early, certainly that Auburn game, but they have been of late. They've made no mistake on what they've been doing. I'm really impressed right now with Georgia, Pat.
Yes, very impressed. And you know what? This seems a little bit like a team been there, done that, knows how good they are, a little bit bored at times, and then you start throwing a little challenge at them, you start giving them a little doubt, and that's when the fangs come out. Because before Kentucky, that was kind of the talk. Oh, Kentucky might be able to get them. Kentucky's playing well. Georgia hadn't looked very good. They destroyed Kentucky, 51-13. I'm not even sure it was that close. Florida game. Bowers is out. We're going to see what they're really made of. Destroyed Florida. Florida went down, scored immediately on the opening drive, and you're like, oh, man, this is going to be a long, good game. And then after that, Georgia just absolutely killed them. And Billy Napier did add to his own demise with a horrible, horrible fourth and short play. Mm. As coaches continue to outsmart themselves on fourth down, we'll get more to that later.
Was that going to be a halfback option, like pass?
Yeah, it was good. They were snapping it through Mertz's legs to ETN, and then, yeah, I think it was an option. I think the intent was to throw it, but he had run. He could have run, but that, you're snapping it to him like 7 yards back at least, maybe more. Everybody's crashing the line of scrimmage, and then, though, to Georgia's credit, like, when they had two guys go out in the pattern, Georgia covered them like blankets. I mean, like, ETN really didn't have anybody to throw to, and that's why he tried to run, and there's a guy right in his face and dragging him down, and it's just like, what are you doing, Billy Napier? That was a bad, bad call.
Can we talk about what Kirby Smart said about Dan Mullen? Did y'all see that?
I did.
No.
Salty, salty Kirby Smart. Well, Dan Mullen, before the game, picked the Gators to win and upset Georgia. And so at his post-game press conference, and this gets back to a wider story that we discussed on the pod before, how coaches now, especially younger coaches, you know, are
rabbit ears.
Are reading they tools, like specifically social media. Yeah. Social media, TV, they are listening, seeing, and responding. No more of the, I don't read the papers. We don't read the papers. Like, there's no more of that. You know, there's no more of that. So Kirby gets up at the post-game and says, yeah, you know, I heard, you know, somebody texted me this morning before the game about this person said we're not going to win, that person. You know, I mean, these people are supposed to be my friends, he said. And then he said, he kind of chuckled and said, well, you know, he doesn't like to recruit.
Oh!
About Dan, which was, if you guys remember, like, I think it was three years ago at the Georgia-Florida game, after the Georgia-Florida game, Dan was asked about the talent gap and the recruiting, and then, yeah, he famously kind of said, like, I'm not talking about recruiting. I don't want to talk about recruiting. And, and then Kirby, I think, responded at his news conference. So it's back and forth. It was funny, though. Yeah, Georgia's...
And here's the thing about that, okay? First off, it went 90... It had to have been 95% of the people bet would have predicted Georgia to win the game. Now, there might have been some of us who thought, hey, it's too big of a point spread, but they don't care. Yeah. It was a big point spread.
Yeah, it was.
Right, so they find the one guy. Like, there's really nobody picking again. And he happens to be the former Florida coach, and he may have only said it because the night before, some Florida old buddies from Florida took him out and said, we'll buy you the steak dinner if you just say Gators will win tomorrow. Like, you had to find the one guy, and then you're so salty, you take a shot. I mean, Dan Mullen, I'm sure, would like to coach again.
Yeah, right.
Come on, man.
It is funny.
You know, he doesn't like to recruit.
Doesn't like to recruit. Like, poor old Georgia. No one giving him any respect.
Yeah. Just, nobody believed in us. Everybody counted us out. Yeah. I can't wait for those lines to start popping back.
Oh, yes. Nobody picked us. Yes. A lot of those things. But Georgia's, I was doing some like calculations. You know, their first two SEC games were 24-14 win over South Carolina and 27-20 against Auburn. Those games kind of came down to the wire. Certainly were second half games. And since then, yeah, they're outscored their next three SEC opponents, Kentucky, Vandy, and in Florida, 131-53. Of course, a big game coming up. I'm sure we'll talk about it later. But Missouri 7-1, surprising 7-1, will come to Athens. And then, even bigger, right, Ole Miss comes to Athens. Next two games for Georgia.
Yeah, the challenges
three straight because I got at Tennessee after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, challenges are coming. Missouri has had a week off, and they are 7-1. They look very good. Ole Miss will come after that. They're 7-1. Defeated Vandy 33-7 yesterday, and they have rallied. You know, they had that kind of no-show against Alabama, but everything else they have done this year is very impressive.
Yep.
Lane Kiffin tweeting out Sunday that it was his 1,000th day sober.
Really?
Didn't see that.
Which we applaud. Very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's a better person, better coach, better dad, better everything, and not as fat.
Yeah, he lost a lot.
Lost a lot of weight. Yeah. You know? So congrats to Lane, and good for him, and good for him always having a sense of humor. I didn't really get a whole lot of humor out of the 1,000 days sober, but good for him. So, but his team is looking pretty good. Yeah, so Georgia's going to have to do some work the next 3 weeks, but I like the work they've put in to get to the work.
Yeah. Georgia's stat real quick from somebody sent me this from Junkyard Blog. on November 8th, 2020, Kirby Smart's record was 48-14. It's now 89-15. He's gone 41-1 since then. That's not bad. That's not bad.
41-1? What is that?
41-1.
What is that? It's Bud Wilkerson run.
Yeah.
Right at OU. Didn't he have
He set the NCAA record. It was like 55 straight wins or something. I can't remember.
Like how many people have done better in a 42 game stretch?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know.
In this era?
Yeah.
I mean, even just with the play. Wow. I guess those numbers are going to come when you're going for third straight. But, man, they look good. Dogs look very good. Okay, the hyped game of the day was two ranked teams, was Oregon Ducks at Utah. Did not turn out to be much of a game. Dominant Ducks, 35-6. Utah had won 18 consecutive home games. They have a great ability to muck up games, keep fighting. We all picked them to cover because of that. Yeah. Keep games coached.
We look really good there.
Yeah, we look all good. But this is Utah, though, right?
Yeah.
They make it a game, and then they win it. And Oregon didn't let them. They got on their neck right away and finished it early. Bo Nix can't play on the road. 24-31, 248, two touchdowns in probably the toughest road environment. Of other than Oregon, or I mean, the only other question would be maybe Washington. Yeah, Washington's tough, but they're all there. It's a very tough, and you got to go up, on that big mountain at altitude. So that ain't easy, is you know, either. Really, really impressive from the Ducks. I know they lost to Washington, but right now they look like the best team in the Pac-12. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, that was outstanding. I mean, that I think we all. Appreciate what they did, just because if you go into Utah and do that, that's legitimate in that league. That's been proven over time. The long home winning streak there, and yes, to your point, they jumped on them early and it was over early. Nick's now, gosh, he's putting up great numbers. I mean, Heisman Trophy numbers. We'll see how things play out. Still other contenders, still a lot of time, but 21 touchdowns, one interception. Is completing 78% of his passes. And, you know, the impressive thing, last year Kenny Dillingham was the offensive coordinator, and he looked great. Now Will Stein's the offensive coordinator. He still looks great. He doesn't need somebody to dial up a certain kind of magic for him. He can make it happen. So Oregon, yeah, they're going to be kicking themselves probably still over the Washington game and not winning that, but they will get another shot if they keep going. Those two teams now, finally, you know, we've been waiting for a little bit of clarity out west, and those two teams have separated themselves. And frankly, Washington's the one that looks a little shakier because they have struggled the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of see it coming. It's like a train, man. Like, you could see Oregon mowing down, you know, winning the rest of the way, getting to the Pac-12 title game, avenging the loss to Washington there, and then maybe squeezing into the CFP. They're that good, and the schedule sets up. Oregon's next two games are at home against Cal and a reeling USC, and then at Arizona State, and then they finish at home with Oregon State. So three home games, and three of those four teams, they'll be pretty heavy favorites. So it's it just kind of all sets up for them to avenge the loss, to Washington. And boy, that would be quite a showdown. It would be so Pac-12 though, if Washington were to make it there to the title game as an unbeaten, which I don't necessarily think is going to happen based on the last 2 weeks that we've seen that Pat just mentioned, right? Like, Washington probably has a loss or two in coming. It just seems like defensively, they're struggling at times too much, and maybe can't run the ball as consistent. But anyway, it would be so Pac-12 if Washington arrived at the Pac-12 title game, the last Pac-12 championship game, undefeated, and then Oregon beats them, and then they all have one loss and they get left out of the playoff again.
Yeah,
right?
It would be
it was so typical, so typical. You went through some of Bo Nix's numbers. They're incredible. I mean, the one that really sticks out to me, in their eight games, he has not once had a completion percentage below 72. It's incredible how accurate and consistently accurate he's been.
Wow. Yeah, it's lining up. I mean, you get to who's going to stop them. They still play USC.
They're not stopping anybody.
No, they're not stopping anybody. Oregon State is probably the best. They just lost to Arizona. Washington gets USC next week. We'll see. USC hasn't stopped anyone. What was it? 50-49. They beat Cal.
Yeah. Cal missing a 2-point conversion. Yeah. Or it would have been, you imagine USC losing a third straight game.
That would have been, the sweetest victory in, I would think, decades for Cal, because, they're one of the schools that was jilted by a longtime in-state rival and led to Cal, wandering to the ACC. And that was their last shot at USC, at least for the foreseeable future. And if they would have beaten them, that would have been huge.
My favorite interesting college football rabbit hole, what is going on story, was that the game was delayed by a student protest.
Yeah. Very Cal.
Yeah, well, I thought it would be like pro Palestine, pro, I don't know, some kind of world event. It was over this one professor who is being suspended
again on brand
for stalking a professor at another school.
Oh my gosh.
A Cal Berkeley professor is accused of stalking a Cal Davis professor. Oh my God. And online, and apparently did. And so they suspended this professor, and then the students loved the professor. So 15 of them were willing to get arrested before the game to delay the game. Others are promising a hunger strike. Now, I have no idea. Jeez. So I'm not getting involved in who's right or who's wrong. But I will say, there are easier ways to get your teacher to give you an A than get arrested. Like, there's probably like 13 true believers and like two others who were like, dude, if I do this, right, she's got to get an A, right? No, I don't know. I don't know the whole thing, but I'm like, I was kind of like, oh, I wonder what they were protesting. Stop the stop oil, or, stop investing in. So, no, not Cal, man. They are way down the list of things. They will stop.
They already protested the other stuff.
Yeah, they already did.
Cal, like in Alabama, it's a part of the, rite of initiation is to join a sorority or fraternity, right? At Cal, it's to get arrested protesting.
That's their Cal Rush.
Yeah,
Cal Rush is get arrested protesting the football game. Anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen there. Ongoing, maybe we'll keep track of the professor on professor stalking allegations. Ooh, who knew? Who knew? I don't want to wade into that one. No. Ohio State up at Wisconsin, 24-10. Buckeyes just keep winning. That's what I like about them. no, this is not your older brother's Buckeye offense. It might be your father's or grandfather's Ohio State offense, but the defense is really good. Camp Randall on a Saturday night, and doesn't matter. Just win and get to the Ann Arbor game and see what the heck happens. Funny part of this, and I saw this all over Twitter and social media. There was TikTok. It's, everybody is now filming everyone's sidelines. The fans. Dave Portnoy of Barstool sat at Camp Randall. He's a Michigan grad. And filmed the Ohio State play calls and then put them on Twitter for everyone to see. Because that is not against the rule.
Right.
It's only against the rule of Michigan. And he had talked to, he also offered Connor Stallion a job. But so like Michigan's alleged crimes, but seemingly have occurred, have opened a loophole to the country that everybody else can just film it and put it online. And if your coaches just happen to stumble upon it, go at it. Like, sign stealing is going to be insane the rest of the year.
That's why the rules got to change. I'm assuming this is all going to trigger a rule change where college football will start using wireless comms, whether it's in the helmet or on the wristband or on the belt. There's even something on the belt where the play can come in on like an LCD screen. Yeah. So something's going to happen here. They're going to use it in the bowl, the bowls in an experimental, some bowl games. But yeah, that all this is going to trigger a change.
We'll get to your story, Ross. But Pat, what do you think of everybody having everyone signs now?
Yeah, here's what I think we're going to see starting immediately. More huddles, more wristbands. Yeah. Remember way back, lo and behold, in like the mid-1990s when Steve Spurrier was winning national championships, running plays in with receivers. The plays are probably too complex for that now, especially if you want to play at tempo. But I think tempo will be sacrificed by a lot of schools in favor of play security because we've seen what happens if somebody has all your signs.
If it's tempo, it's hard to get them to adjust too quickly. That's the thing.
Tempo
can beat it, but tempo can defeat it in some
ways. TCU did that a little bit, right?
It's too fast to get everybody to understand. Oh, it might be a run, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't, they signal and you've got to relay. Like there's a lot of moving parts. Mm-hmm. If you're snapping, go ahead. That's what I've been told anyway. Go ahead.
No, I was going to talk about, I don't remember when this story dropped. I don't think we talked about it on the pod because I think it was after. But how about TCU coaches, at least some of them, knowing that the Michigan had their signs before the semifinal game and then changing some of the signage but using some of the old signage to try to confuse the Michigan sideline. We had that story on Thursday.
Yeah.
And then it's just – but they also did some other things like tempo, but also they waited to the very last minute to sign, as well, to right before the snap. So there wouldn't be any changes or any substitutions too, which is going back to the tempo.
Yeah.
There are ways to beat it. And it's starting to become so obvious. And we'll get to that, Dan, that other story that we had on Saturday about this Michigan issue in the CFP. But it's become so obvious that so many coaching staffs, especially the Big Ten, knew about this going back to last year. I mean, it's crazy how many people obviously knew. And it's shocking that it actually took as long as it did to come out. It was such a well-known thing.
It's an open secret in the Big Ten, for sure.
Yeah.
So you had a story about Ohio State requesting clarification on a rule last playoffs to see if they could scout or anyone could scout in person.
Yeah, so, games. Okay, it gets a little confusing, but so the NCAA has their rule, which is at the center of this case, no in-person scouting. In-person scouting being prohibited. Cannot go to a future opponent's game. And then, the second rule is you can't record anything, anytime. The focus is on that probe of the in-person. The probe is focused on that in-person scouting. And while the NCAA has banned that for 30 years, in-person scouting is allowed in the postseason. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about it, right? Because you're NCAA baseball regional, you have all the coaches there, all the teams there. NCAA basketball tournaments you guys see all the time. I know where coaches sit in the stands and watch their next opponent's games. Postseason is legal to be at a future opponent's game in the postseason. So what happened was last year, last December, leading up to the semifinals, Ohio State requested a clarification from the NCAA on that rule. Can you scout the other semifinal because it's a postseason? Can you go to the game? And the NCAA went to the CFP because the NCAA does not operate the playoffs. CFP does, and CFP said, you know what? We don't have a rule on this. We didn't even thought about it. We went 9 years without this being a question. And so they just – all they did was fall back on the NCAA's postseason policy, which is you can scout games in person. So last year, at last year's semifinals, you were allowed. Georgia and TCU say they didn't do it. Michigan and Ohio State basically declined comment on if they did it or not. But it was allowed. It was permitted. And then in April, right, in April the CFP met and they passed a new policy making it impermissible to scout games in the playoff, which is noteworthy because the playoff's about to expand, right? They're going to have 8 games total. So now 11. That's 11 games total, 8 extra games. So, now you can't do it. So it's fascinating. What does it all mean? It could mean nothing at all. I think it's probably too coincidental for it to be nothing at all that all this is happening. And we know Ohio State and other Big Ten programs knew about Michigan's in-person scouting system. So either Ohio State wanted the advantage that Michigan had gotten illegally for years, and so Ohio State wanted it, or Ohio State was positioning in some way to, you know, report Michigan if they saw them or saw a Michigan staffer at their semifinal game. I don't know. It's all very interesting, but the bottom line is, Michigan, Ohio State, November 25th, be there.
I like, as if that rivalry wasn't already must-watch. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, maybe a little heated. Yeah, 20 million plus, no problem. Yeah, I mean, like, none of this denies what Michigan is alleged to do. It does not minimize it. But clearly, you know, the NCAA rule on this was rickety and sloppy and full of loopholes, and it's like they got to tighten this thing up, because why have the rule that you can't film if a fan, not just any old person, can go to any game and film the sideline and put it up on TikTok or YouTube or Twitter or whatever, Reels, whatever you want. Like, the purpose is defeated. Now, I get in 1994 you didn't think, boy, that this is a thing, but clearly that the loophole is there, and now everyone's throwing. I mean, if you're a fan, if you're Ole Miss, you're playing Georgia in 2 weeks and you could get to the game against Missouri, why wouldn't you try to help your team out? I'm not saying why, a lot of people wouldn't bother, they just want to watch the game or not go, but somebody will and be like, hey, I'll help Ole Miss out, put it up there. Hey, maybe you look. I mean, if you're the every team has a designated sign stealer, they're going through the TV broadcast, they're going through the all 22. They're trying to get as many plays as they can. And maybe they can't get them all. Maybe they can only get a few. Maybe they can get a ton of them. Whatever it is, they're trying to do everything they can comparatively. And you give those guys that are already good at that, and that's what they do, more plays. Like every team's going to, it's just sort of like this whole thing's become a big mess. If there's a comic element to this, that to me is part of it. Just rando fan now, like on the there, a lot of fans think they're part of the staff, right? A lot of fans think they can help the ball club. Now you can, not just with your NIL donation. Do it up.
I mean, we've said before, one of the reasons the NCAA rule book is as big as it is because A, schools have tried that many ways to cheat. And B, because of the unintended consequences of every single rule they pass. It's like, oh, right, we didn't think of that. Oh, they found a way around that. Oh, there's a problem there. And so you got to go back and fix it, amend it, add to it, et cetera. So this is yet another area where they're probably going to have to expand the rule book.
Put the headsets in and it's moot. And then say, we don't care what you're doing. Like you can cut this off real quick, and they just need to. If you don't want to pay for the helmet, and you can't afford it, then you are at risk of somebody stealing your signs.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty minimal too. Like the from what I understand, the cost isn't as much of the issue apparently as helmet manufacturers raising the problem with the warranty in the warranty companies. That being is apparently an issue. So I think a lot of folks think, and this may happen. This may happen in the bowl games. Is they're going to use like the wrist thing or the belt LCD screen where the plays pop on it instead of doing the helmet. I don't know. At some point, you would think they would get resolved the helmet warranty situation.
And there was a bit. I did talk to someone who's on the football rules committee when they last debated it. They think it was about 7 years ago, and the NFL did used to have a lot of wireless issues. Right. You'd cover an NFL game, they'd say, Denver's helmet communication is out, so Green Bay has to turn theirs off.
Right.
They had like a policy. And so they were like, God, if the NFL can't make this thing work, how often is it going to be a problem at our place? And it's just, so they're like, we don't want to deal with it. It's like, well, now you're dealing with it because every team has had their sign stolen this week. Every team, all your teams, everyone else. The funny part is the fans aren't like that. I mean, they are making fun of Michigan and that's fine, but they're not sitting there going, well, we would never do that. It's like, let me go do that.
Yes. It's just like the old, school A says school B, they're cheating. You know, they're cheating. And school B says school A, they are cheating. Biggest cheaters on it. You know, same thing.
All gray hats. Yeah. Jerry Tarkanian's best line. 9 out of 10 schools are cheating. The other is in last place.
Ain't cheating, ain't trying.
Yeah, don't play the moral high card here, ever. It will come back to get you.
Yes.
All right.
But you go over the line, right? Even if you cheat a little too much, maybe, right? Then you end up getting caught. I think we're seeing the situation with Michigan and so many others through the year. I think of LSU basketball too. Like if you go over the line, you end up getting reported and caught.
Yes. And so your previous claims of not ever doing anything generally will fall apart. Pat, explain this to me.
What's
Louisville
that?
Resident. Louisville, Pitt beats Louisville 38-21. Notre Dame beats Pitt 58-7. Louisville beats Pitt, Notre Dame. Louisville beats Notre Dame 33-20.
Yeah, that's welcome to the ACC. And well, whatever Notre Dame, Notre Dame we've long established now as like being very hard to pigeonhole. Really good, disappointing week to week. Similarly with Louisville, and then Pittsburgh has always been a kind of a wild card with Pat Narduzzi, and now I think where Narduzzi was throwing some players under the bus and they were ripping him yesterday. It was quite a lovely scene apparently at Pitt yesterday. But the thing with Louisville, I was at Louisville Duke game and my car got towed, and we might have to get into that.
We're gonna get into that. Hold on.
It was politely towed. It was politely
I'll let
towed.
You finish your set this and then we're gonna get into that.
But Louisville is good enough to thump Notre Dame, to thump Duke, and in between those two games, to cough up a hairball against a not very good Pittsburgh team. And what do these things often come down to when teams are relatively equal? Turnovers. Yeah, exactly. Louisville against Pittsburgh was a -3 turnover margin. It's the only game they've been minus this year. It's the only game they've lost. And Jeff Brohm yesterday after they beat Duke, somebody asked him, how big was an emphasis on not turning it over? He said that was priority 1, priority 2, and priority 3. And they did not turn the ball over yesterday, and they rolled on Duke. So, that's the fickle nature of college football, unless you're at the, the Georgia level, Michigan level. Michigan may have other issues. But anyway, that's the difference between the high-functioning teams and the rest of them that are up and down.
Car towing.
Please tell your story.
What happened? You parked illegally. You violated the rules and thought you'd get away with it.
Connor Stallions showed me where to park and he was wrong.
Yeah, you're lecturing Michigan. You're lecturing Michigan. Clearly, you cheated in parking.
I did not. This was an inadvertent level 3 violation.
Mm.
Okay. Mm. So I had my parking pass. It's the bronze lot at Louisville, which is good parking. I appreciated they gave me a chance for good parking, but it's confusing. It's like bronze J, part H, space 4. And you have to park on this in the exact specific spot. It's not like you come into some lot and they're like, yeah, you know, just park anywhere. Yeah. So I got to bronze J, but I missed the H part and ended up in like F or something. Don't know anything. Park my car. Go cover the game. Went and what Louisville has, their cool thing, they've got these cabooses in the back, like booster cabooses, like the cockabooses at South Carolina. Yeah. Because the railroad tracks run right outside the stadium, so you can rent them, and you have your big tailgate there. It's a very cool scene. So afterwards, I finished writing just a very short story, and Jeff Brom, local guy, all of his high school buddies have caboose number whatever back there, and so Brom's back there hanging out with him. He's got a solo cup of red wine, leaves early, some other people stay, hung out, you know, I don't know, like maybe 45 minutes or whatever. And then I was walking to my car with another media person. My car is gone. I'm like, what just happened? It's 10 o'clock. There's no cars around. I don't know what to do. Fortunately, I called Lottie Stockwell, assistant AD in charge of getting done. And she knows what's going on. She's like, okay, so this is what we do with cars that we tow. We take them either to the purple lot at the very back, like 400 yards away from the stadium, or we move them to the spot it was supposed to be in. So it's like she said, most likely it's towed to the very back. So I walk to the back. My friend Drew Diener actually gives me a ride back there. There's no cars. Like, oh no. I figure I'm going to end up at, you know, Bob's Towing in Okolona at midnight trying to get my car back. It turns out, no, they very politely, they saw my little parking pass thing and they took my car and put it where it was supposed to be.
Oh, no, so they towed it to the spot.
They towed it to the spot. Like a 150-yard tow, but they did. Now, the bigger joke at the end of this is, which I was appreciative of that, when they find, like, in three conversations with Lottie Stockwell, she tells me where to go to free up the other spot for whoever's supposed to be there.
Yeah, you stole someone's spot. You didn't miss.
So they did this, like, early.
Apparently yeah. So. Wow. I don't know.
This is not a parking violation. Pat stole a spot. Stole some guy. Some good Louisville fan paid a booster rate to get in the bronze lot, HJ, whatever. And you stole it.
Let me finish just the cosmic joke at the end of this thing. So at the end of, you know, this rigmarole of trying to find it, and they say, okay, your car is now here. Go back here. It was right outside the damn caboose where I was sitting there with Jeff Brom.
So you probably could have watched him drop your car off.
Maybe if I'd been out there the whole time. But like, I walked out of that caboose and then walked, you know, halfway around Greater Louisville looking for my car, and it was right there.
That is very polite, though. That is amazing. Polite. Why? I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
They should have just told the guy to go to your spot, other than he's not near his friends or something.
Right, and then he's mad. He's like, I'm doing the right thing. So I accept. I screwed up my parking assignment. That's my level 3 violation.
I've never heard of that. I've never heard of a story like this. A towed car towed to its appropriate spot and not towed back to the Bob's, you know, Bob's Towing in auto, where you have to pay $300 to get the car out of.
Right. I mean...
Wow.
Pat and I had a famous one where we were at the Rose Bowl national championship game against, was it Florida State Auburn? Was that the game?
Yeah, San Gabriel's. Right, 2013.
Yes, we park out in the, whatever, the grass, the golf course.
At the Rose Bowl, yeah.
We have our spot. It's not a spot, just, you know, go over here, right? Eighth fairway or something. We find a spot, and we work after the game. So we're not done, and it's a national title game, so you're not hustling out of there. We leave 2+ hours after the game, right? Maybe 3.
Oh, at least, yeah.
There's still cars all over the place. There were a lot of cars still out there, and there's still people. Florida State fans are still partying.
Yeah.
It's like guys still having their tailgate. We walk. We go to about where our car should be, and in there. We walk over here, not there. We're walk. I swear it was by that tree. Nah, this was it. We're walking. Can't find the thing. There's still like 500 cars out there. And then we see the tow truck is starting to take some away. Oh, God. We go find a cop. we're in like suits, like ties. Like we're the only sober people still left in the area. Right. We got work bags. I think even the cop, he was felt a little bad for us. They're like, yeah, it's probably towed to this place. We don't know. We have no idea where our car is. Could have been stolen, probably towed. We're like, well, what do we do now? You can't get a Uber to the 8th Fairway.
Yeah, exactly. I need you to come get me on the sand trap by, on the 8th Fairway. Yeah.
We have no way out. He's like, can we get to downtown Pasadena where we can get a cab out of here? And the guy's like, yeah, it's like 3 mile walkers. I mean, I don't know. It's like climb over the, like, dude. And so they go, all right, we'll get you a ride. So they show back up and they put us in a prisoner wagon.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
A paddy wagon.
Where you belong. Where you both belong. Well, that's right. Truly.
It was a miracle. We had never been there before.
We're put in the back. And they got the cage and the bars up, and at least they didn't handcuff us. There's no door handle, right? Obviously. We're like getting driven, and they dropped us two of us off in the middle of Pasadena on like a street corner by a hotel where we could find a taxi to take us home and deal with the issue the next day. But we literally were like, we didn't quite get arrested, but we were under detainment by the Pasadena PD.
We got like a $275 cab ride.
Oh,
and
my
Johnny
God,
Ludden had to go get the car the next day.
Yeah, it was bad. Oh, it was not a great day. I blame Pat. It was his car, not mine. He just picked me up.
Didn't need a ride, you wouldn't have been pulled into it.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. Yeah, I was pulled in. Anyway, but we're driving back in the, you're tired. It's the end of the day. You worked all day, and it's like you're in the police wagon going, I hope that there's not going to be like a cross of communication and we're just pulling up to the station and they're just gonna be, get out, no we're not under arrest, we were heard it all, buddy, right there, cell block C. Next thing you know, I'm walking the yard in San Quentin like, serious, what are you in for? They towed my car. Just got sent to the hole, man. Anyway, we escaped. So thank you, Pasadena PD, in the long run. But I don't know. I thought maybe a regular squad car just let us sit in, something else other than that. But all right, whatever. Got us there. All right. Anyway, let's hand out some Heisman. Small sample Heisman time. We don't like to hand it out at the end of the year. We like giving it every single week. Anyone got a small sample Heisman to give?
Yes. I got one. A game we haven't talked about, North Carolina and Georgia Tech. North Carolina blew a big lead, I believe. Let's see, they led. They led for most of the game. At one point, led late in the third quarter by 35-24. Blew the lead. Georgia Tech stormed back to win. Georgia Tech had like 200 yards rushing in the fourth quarter of the game.
Crazy. It was unbelievable. And
much of that went to Dante Smith, a senior running back from Tennessee. If you never heard of Dante Smith, it's okay, because he had about 50 yards rushing entering the game on the season. He had 178 against North Carolina. A touchdown, was averaging 8 yards a pop, had 22 carries, and just part of a larger Georgia Tech, coming back to win that game. And all of a sudden, the wheels are off for the Tar Heels, and Georgia Tech sitting there, and I think 4-4, I believe, and in position probably to make a bowl game for the first time in a little while.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. I'm also going to go with a running back. Small sample Heisman, but starting to make an argument for large sample Heisman. Ollie Gordon II of Oklahoma State. Holy moly. We know Oklahoma State was 2-2 and going nowhere after September. They've now won 4 straight, and Ollie Gordon is blowing up. 5 straight 100-yard games. 2 straight 200-yard games. He went for 282 and 4 touchdowns against West Virginia, then backed that up with 271 and 2 touchdowns against Cincinnati. And next up is an Oklahoma run defense that doesn't look very good. So Ollie Gordon has powered the revival of Oklahoma State and has a chance to keep going on that front and really make a name for himself and for Oklahoma State and be a major factor in the last Bedlam game.
I'm going to give my small sample Heisman to North Carolina State wide receiver Kevin Concepcion. Five receptions, two of them for touchdowns, though, including a 72-yarder as part of NC State's impressive 24-17 victory over Clemson. And they were up 24-7 going into the fourth quarter and then held them off. In part because Concepcion's really good play. MJ Moore is passing it. Put a, I wouldn't call it a nail in the coffin of Clemson's season, but really rocked them, dropped them back to 4-4. NC State is 5-3. Dave Dorian, again, another rabbit ear coach. He's yelling at Steve Smith. Mm-hmm.
Kiss my ass, he told Steve Smith.
Steve Smith, the former Carolina receiving star in Utah. Yeah. He's the guest picker at the Utah game day. NC State's gonna, they're waiting for basketball season. He gets all fired up about this. Hey, whatever motivates you, but really, Steve Smith, like, did we think he was gonna research every game? I don't know. Anyway, NC State, that was a big game in the ACC on where you're gonna go, and Clemson is still Clemson, and that's a heck of a performance by NC State, so we'll give it to Concepcion. He can share it with all his teammates on a good victory. And no, it's not just a basketball school. They got a lot of good sports down there. A lot, they actually really do. They really do.
Great swimming school. Great swimming.
Yeah. I think they got women's basketball, volleyball, all sorts of
cross
stuff.
Cross country, wrestling.
Yeah. NC State. Go Pack. So, and hey, beating Clemson is a lot of fun. Everyone, it's open season on the Tigers. I don't know. They got a lot of work to do. All right. Plenty of mean things. Can anyone say something nice? How about our jailbird, Pat Forty? Can you say something nice?
I can.
No, I don't think you can.
Well, we'll see. I'm going to say something nice about the running skills of Oregon State kicker Atticus Sappington, is a hell of a name. I mean, that is a great name. I once lobbied my wife to name our oldest Atticus, and I was roundly shot down. Congratulations to the Sappingtons who actually did it. Anyway, Atticus showed some decent moves in making a 9-yard run against Arizona late Saturday night in a classic Pac-12 after dark moment. For a kicker, he had a little wiggle, he had some speed, got 9 yards. What, one lifetime carry, 9 yards. Not bad, right? Except for the fact that he should never have had the ball in the worst call of the season, even worse than anything Dan Lanning has done. The only thing that's actually worse was Mario Cristobal not kneeling the ball. But even that is kind of close here. Because this is the last play of the first half. Oregon State is in a tie game against Arizona. They are on the Arizona 16-yard line. There are 3 seconds left. You line up for a 33-yard field goal. Atticus is 9-for-10 on the year. He's made his last 5 kicks. He can kick a 33-yard field goal. But no, we're going to fake it and pitch it to him, and he's going to try to run what would have been a total of about 25 yards through the entire defense as a kicker on the last play. It isn't like, oh, you get a first down and there's time left to do something else, or you're trying to get closer for a better field goal or anything. This was it, and you run a fake field goal requiring your kicker to go 25 yards for a touchdown. Lo and behold, he did not make it. O.J. Simpson might not have made it. Barry Sanders might not have made it. Anyway, what happens? Oregon State loses by 3. So, yet another brilliant I hate field goals decision by Jonathan Smith this time. The whole state of Oregon hates field goals. Dan Lanning hates them. Jonathan Smith hates them. Both of them have lost games by a field goal. Good job.
Yeah, that was nice. You're so nice, Pat. You really are. You're nice, a peach. Yeah. I'm going to really say something nice about David Braun, Northwestern interim coach. I think everybody's well aware of all of the things that have happened over the summer at Northwestern with Pat Fitzgerald and lawsuits and firings and all of this stuff, investigations. And David Braun takes over. He had not coached a single game at Northwestern when he took over at interim coach. He had come in last year. He's a small college guy. North Dakota State, Northern Iowa, UC Davis, Winona State, places that he's coached, some place called Culver Stockton. So he comes to Northwestern. He gets before coaches a single game. He's been there for about 7 months, and he's named interim coach. And lo and behold, the Wildcats are 4-4. They beat Maryland 33-27 last week. Even before that, they hung around with Nebraska 17-9. They won, beat Minnesota earlier this year. They've got a real shot of going to a bowl, which would be stunning and probably would almost certainly, you would think, get him the full-time job. They've got Iowa, home game against Iowa, home game against Purdue, and they've got to travel to Wisconsin and Illinois. They need to win two of the final four. So, David Braun, something nice.
Incredible job. I'm going to say something nice and stay in the Big Ten West. Also, I mentioned this last episode, but Nebraska, Matt Rhule, first year, has quietly rebounded. Started 0-2, including a loss to Minnesota. They lose to Colorado. They beat Purdue 31-14 at home Saturday. Looked very, very good doing it. They are disciplined. They run the ball. They are playing good defense. They not have a whole lot of it's not a big offensive weapon thing. I mean, you want a stat? How about Heinrich Harburg, their quarterback? He had 2 touchdown passes. You know how many completions he had? 6. Pretty good TD to completion ratio. But they got a whole bunch of guys that run the ball. They're grinding out victories. And in a first season of Matt Rhule, they're now, you know, in the mix for they're tied for the Big Ten West. They're 5-3 overall. They get Michigan State coming in this week. They should get them bowl eligible. I think if you're a Cornhusker fan, you're feeling pretty good about the state of the program. And it's funny because early on they lose at Colorado and the whole thing's like, look at Deion's turning this thing in a second. And he had a harder flip than Nebraska. And it's kind of maybe frustrating for Nebraska fans to deal with that. They never like losing to Colorado. But, hey, and by the end of October, like you're feeling really good on where this is headed and what's possible at Nebraska. I really think they're building. As bad as the Big Ten West is, they're not going to remain that bad. There's going to be a Big Ten West. But this program is on the rise, and they keep showing it with solid victory. So good job by Nebraska and Matt Rhule. All right, we will be back. We may send our show out late Tuesday night and react to the first playoff rankings. Playoff ranking show is on Tuesday, so we may be a little later on Tuesday. Don't worry, we didn't all presumably we didn't all pass away and never come back. We will be there for you. We may have to switch the schedule a little bit. People love arguing about that show. And but we'll see. If not, maybe you'll get us earlier on Tuesday. It'll be a little present for you. Be exciting. I know you're all just so excited when we draw. Anyway, that's the show. Keep listening. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We appreciate each and every one of you. We'll talk to you later.